Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into something pretty fundamental: how firms actually produce all the goods and services we see around us.
Yeah, it's a core concept. We've got some detailed notes here and that helpful video you mentioned.
Right. So the mission today is basically to pull out the main ideas: how production works, what goes into it, and, you know, what makes firms choose one way over another.
Exactly. Get a good foundational grasp without drowning in too much jargon or complexity.
Okay, let's start at the beginning then. The notes define a firm. What are we talking about there, fundamentally?
Well, simply put, it's any organization, right? It uses resources, inputs, to create outputs.
Outputs being the goods and services for us, the consumers.
Precisely. It sounds basic, but yeah, it's the starting point for everything else.
And production itself is that whole process, taking the inputs and transforming them.
That's it. Combining those inputs, we'll get to what they are in a sec, to make the final product. The video called it a transformation process.
Yeah, I liked that. Like, raw stuff goes in one end, finished stuff comes out the other.
Pretty much. It captures that conversion idea well.
Okay, so what are these inputs? The factors of production, I think they're called. Land, labor.
Land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurship. Those are the big four.
Let's break those down. Land seems obvious, like the physical space.
It is the physical space, yeah, but it's actually broader in economics. It means all natural resources.
Oh, okay. So like water, forests, minerals too.
Exactly. Anything from nature used in production. And, you know, the notes highlight that even different bits of land have different values based on their characteristics. Fertile soil versus desert, for instance.
Makes sense. More useful land is worth more. Okay, next up. Labor.
Labor is the human element, all human effort, basically.
So not just physical work, like on a construction site.
Nope. Physical and mental. So the person on the assembly line, sure. But also the engineer designing the product, the manager organizing the team, the salesperson. It's the whole range of human input.
Right. Covers a lot. Then there's capital. Now, this one can be tricky because we often think capital means money.
That's a really common mix-up, yeah. Important distinction. In this context, capital means man-made resources used to produce other things.
Ah, so like tools, machines, factory buildings.
Precisely. Things that aren't consumed directly but help make the things we consume. The notes give the example of a sewing machine in a factory that's capital. The clothes are the output.
Got it. So it's the actual equipment, not the money used to buy it.
Exactly. It's a produced means of production.
Okay, so land provides the raw materials and space. Labor's the human effort. Capital gives us the tools. What's the last one? Entrepreneurship.
Ah, yes. This is kind of the spark plug, maybe. The driving force.
How so?
Well, the entrepreneur is the person or group who takes the initiative, organizes the other three factors, land, labor, capital, and crucially, takes the risk.
Risk is a big part of it then.
Huge. They spot an opportunity, figure out how to combine the resources, innovate, but there's no guarantee of success. Many new businesses fail, right? That underlines the risk involved. They drive the whole thing forward.
Okay, foundational elements check. Now, firms don't all combine these the same way, do they? The notes talk about capital intensive versus labor intensive.
Right, that's about the mix of capital and labor they use.
So capital intensive means lots of machines.
Essentially, yeah. A high ratio of capital machinery, tech compared to the amount of labor.
Yeah.
Think car manufacturing, oil refining. Industries mentioned in the notes.
Big factories, lots of automation.
Exactly. Often involves huge upfront investment in equipment, so you get high fixed costs, depreciation on the machines. It usually needs large scale operation to be efficient.
Okay. And the opposite is labor intensive. More people, fewer machines.
That's the idea. Relies more heavily on human workers. The examples given were things like hospitality, maybe some types of agriculture, handmade crafts.
Where the main input or big chunk of the cost is the workforce.
Precisely. And the notes interestingly link this to economic situations. Like in places with lower wages, maybe labor-intensive methods make more economic sense than shelling out for expensive tech.
That's a good point. The relative cost matters. Okay, so that's how things are made. Then the notes shift to production versus productivity. They sound similar.
They do, but the difference is really important. Production is just the total amount made, the quantity. How many widgets came off the line?
Just the raw number.
Yeah. Productivity, though, is about efficiency. It's how effectively you're using your resources.
So output per unit of input, working smarter, not just harder.
Exactly that. It measures how much bang you get for your buck, essentially, from your inputs.
And we can measure that for different inputs, like labor productivity.
Right. Labor productivity is total output divided by the number of workers. Yep. How many widgets per worker.
And capital productivity, output divided by the capital used.
Yep. How much output you get for the machinery or investment involved. It's all about that efficiency ratio.
And why is that efficiency, that productivity, so crucial for a firm?
Well, think about it. Higher productivity means you're getting more output from the same inputs, or the same output with fewer inputs.
Which means lower costs per item.
Bingo. Lower average costs. That leads to higher profits, potentially lower prices for consumers, more money to reinvest. Yeah. It's fundamental to competitiveness and growth. Think about big historical leaps, like the assembly line. Massive productivity booster.
Okay, so boosting productivity is key. How do firms actually do that? The notes had some practical ways.
Yeah, several strategies. One big one is training employees. Better skills mean more efficient work.
Makes sense, investing in people.
Definitely. Then there's worker motivation incentives, better working conditions, that kind of thing. Happy, motivated workers tend to be more productive.
Human factors matter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then the more obvious one, perhaps, investing in better technology and automation. New machines can often do things faster or better.
Right, replacing older tech.
Or introducing tech where there wasn't any. And finally, just better management. Streamlining processes, cutting waste, organizing things more efficiently.
Lots of levers to pull there. Okay, let's switch gears a bit to that investment in capital goods, the machines, the tech. What drives a firm to actually spend money on that stuff? It can be expensive.
It really can be. It's a big decision influenced by several economic factors. The most basic one, according to the notes, is just the price of the capital goods themselves.
Makes sense. If machines get more expensive, firms buy fewer.
Generally, yes. Standard demand principle.
Yeah.
Higher price, lower demand, or a contraction in demand, as the notes put it.
Okay. What about the cost of other inputs, like labor? How does that affect buying machines?
Ah, that's a huge one. If labor costs go up relative to capital costs, firms have a stronger incentive to substitute capital for labor.
So automate more if wages rise, like those self-service kiosks you see.
Exactly like that. It's a classic substitution effect. But the notes add a smart point. It's not always simple.
How so?
Well, what if the new machine needs highly skilled, expensive labor to operate it? If that skilled labor is also costly, it might actually reduce the demand for the capital because they work together. They can be complementary.
Ah, interesting nuance. Okay, what else influences capital investment? The firm's own situation.
Definitely. Profit levels are key. If a firm is making good profits, it has the funds, the retained earnings, to reinvest in new capital.
So success breeds investment.
Often, yes. And related to that is corporate tax. Lower taxes mean more profit left over, potentially more available for investment.
Government policy playing a role there. What about borrowing costs? Interest rates.
Crucial. Lower interest rates make it cheaper to borrow money to buy the capital. So that encourages investment.
Okay.
And even if the firm uses its own money, lower interest rates mean the opportunity cost is lower on wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving up less potential interest by investing instead of saving.
Right. Makes investment more attractive either way. What about just feelings about the future?
Expectations. Hugely important. If a firm expects future sales to be strong, they'll be much more willing to invest now to meet that future demand.
Optimism drives investment.
And pessimism holds it back. Business confidence is a major factor.
And lastly, just new technology itself, right?
Absolutely. When new, more efficient, or better technology comes along, it creates a powerful incentive to upgrade, to invest in that new capital, to stay ahead, or just keep up. Drives that cycle of innovation.
Okay, we've covered labor, capital. Let's loop back to land. What drives the demand for land itself? Why is one plot more sought after than another?
Several things, according to the notes. First is just the inherent productivity of the land itself.
Like fertile soil for farming.
Exactly. Or a location that's really good for business, like a city center with lots of foot traffic, more productive land, higher demand, usually higher rent or price.
Location, location, location.
That's a big part of the economic value, yeah. Commercial areas are valuable because of access to customers, infrastructure, other businesses.
What about the resources on the land or under it?
Scarcity plays a big role there. As natural resources become scarcer, the land that provides access to them becomes more valuable.
Like water.
Water is a prime example mentioned in the notes. Mm. Global demand has apparently shot up like sixfold in the last century.
Wow.
And it's expected to keep rising rapidly, driven by industry, farming, domestic use. So land with reliable water access, increasingly valuable and in demand.
that really highlights the resource pressure. And what about just more people living in cities? Urbanization.
Another huge driver.
Mm.
As cities grow, the demand for land within and around them skyrockets for housing, offices, shops, factories, everything.
Pushing up prices.
Inevitably, it reshapes the whole economic geography.
So it really is a complex picture. Firms juggling these factors, land, labor, capital, driven by entrepreneurs trying to boost productivity, making investment choices based on costs, expectations, technology.
It's definitely dynamic. They're constantly weighing these things up, trying to make the best decisions in a changing economic landscape. Understanding these pieces helps make sense of why things are produced the way they are.
Okay, so just to quickly recap the key takeaways. Firms use land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurship to make stuff. They might lean more heavily on capital or labor depending on costs and other factors. Boosting productivity efficiency is vital for them.
Right, lower costs, more competitive.
And decisions about investing in new equipment are sensitive to things like prices, interest rates, how optimistic they feel, and new tech coming along.
Don't forget taxes and profits too.
Right, those too. And finally, the demand for land depends a lot on how productive it is, where it's located, and increasingly the scarcity of resources like water, plus big trends like urbanization.
That covers the main ground, yeah. A solid overview of the mechanics behind production.
Great. So as we finish up this deep dive, here's something maybe to chew on. Think about the products you use every day. Your phone, your food, your clothes. Knowing what we've discussed, can you guess which industries behind those products rely more on big capital investments versus lots of labor? And thinking about those global trends, cities getting bigger, resources like water getting scarcer, how might that change how these things are made and maybe what they cost down the line?
That's a good thought exercise. Applying these ideas to the real world.
Definitely something to ponder. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.